Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. You're listening to KFM. It's Tuesday, the 9th of May. It's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Conor DeBarra. He's a PhD student in immunology at Maynooth University and Irish Research Council scholar. Maynooth University research reveals cancer-killing benefits of a popular obesity treatment drug, GLP-1. And Conor is on the line to tell us all about that. We'll hear from Peter White, chairman of Relay for Life Kildare. The countdown is on to Relay for Life in Kildare this year. Helen Martin, the CEO of the charity's regulator. 9 out of 10 Irish adults donated to charity last year. We are a very charitable bunch here in this country. And then we'll speak to Glenn Campbell, Eurovision super fan, of course, from Newbridge. He is over in Liverpool because Wild Youth are representing Ireland in the Eurovision Song Contest semi-final tonight. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can call in. Kate Dooley is on the phones, 045 898 999. If you want to email me, it's studio@kfmradio.com. Or, of course, you can send us a text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, Maynooth University's Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health Research has just published groundbreaking research into the benefits of a popular obesity treatment drug, GLP-1, and it has found to have cancer-killing benefits. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Conor DeBarra. He's a PhD student in Maynooth University. Good afternoon, Conor.
Hi, Caoimhe. Thank you for having me on.
Conor, tell us about this firstly and what this means.
So what it means at the minute is that we know people with obesity have a higher risk of developing various cancers, and this is due to them having certain immune cells that don't work correctly. So what this research shows is that after taking this weight loss drug, GLP-1, for 6 months, is that their what's called NK cells, or these natural killer cells, are better able to kill tumour cells afterwards, which hopefully will give them a better chance of fighting off any tumours that develop.
Okay, so is it the drug itself that is directly, I suppose, beneficial towards cancer-killing benefits, or is it the fact that it brings down people's weight and that is the correlation, Conor?
What we found is that there was no correlation between the amount of weight a person lost and their an increased ability to kill cancer cells. So it doesn't seem to be that. However, we just say that weight isn't always the best indicator of a person's overall health. And this drug also improves other things like blood glucose. So there's other health factors that are happening as well, but we couldn't find any association with weight.
Okay. So it's just the drug itself. I suppose the big question for people listening in right now is that how soon can this, you know, become mainstream?
Well, there seems to be issues around supply at the minute. I think it's probably a lot of people are hearing about it on social media and such, that it seems to be very popular in places like Hollywood with celebrities taking it. So there seems to be a supply issue in America. But it's only been recently approved for weight loss in Ireland. So hopefully over the next few months and years, that will become more available to the average person, especially if it gets on the drug payment scheme.
OK, so right now it's not on the drugs payment scheme.
No, you have to meet a very strict set of criteria for to be prescribed it. So I think it's not only a person has to be struggling with obesity, but you also have to have other factors such as type 2 diabetes as well.
Okay. So really, at the moment, this drug isn't being used to kill cancer, essentially. And I don't want to misconstrue what you're saying here. It is just for obesity at the minute.
Yeah, so it's not like a chemotherapy, which would be something that goes in and kills the tumour cells. Basically, what this is doing, it's coming along and it's helping the immune system kind of get back to a baseline level. So it's kind of giving the immune system a boost rather than targeting the tumour cells directly itself.
Okay. Were there any other benefits to taking the drug?
We were very focused on just looking at, say, this one particular immune cell. But what we have seen is that other research shows that people on GLP-1 have a lower incidence of cardiovascular disease after taking for a period of time as well. So there are other overall health benefits that people are seeing, which is really, really exciting.
Okay. If people were to try and get this, it can't really be got here. Is it very expensive?
I believe it's about €200 a month. I could be wrong. It could be a small bit more or a small bit less. But you're talking about €2,400 in the year for somebody to be on this, which I know most people probably couldn't afford to pay out of pocket. Mm. So that would be a consideration for people as well. So hopefully it'll become more widely available and more affordable for people to get.
Okay. Do you know, is it used in other jurisdictions within the EU or just in the US at the moment, Connor?
So at the minute, so the formulation that we looked at, basically, it's called liraglutide or semaglutide. This is specifically for type 2 diabetes, but Wegovy is the brand name, or one of the brand names, which is going to be used for weight loss. I think that recently got European medical approval. So obviously, that's not my area of interest, but I'm assuming there's going to be a small bit of a delay between approval and then it actually reaching people.
Okay, very good. Well, that's very interesting. That is Conor DeBarra, PhD student in immunology at Maynooth University, with that news that the research reveals cancer-killing benefits of a popular obesity treatment drug, GLP-1. Thank you very much, Conor, for joining us. And do let us know what you think about that, 0833 97 97 97. I think I have read a couple of articles about that, and celebs over in the US and that taking these kind of drugs or trying to get them to bring down weight loss, but the new research there from Maynooth is showing that potentially having some good outcomes in terms of cancer killing benefits of this drug. But of course, more research needed, and it's not used in the mainstream for specifically cancer just at the moment, obesity. So let me know what you think. 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, it is the 10th anniversary year of Relay for Life in Kildare, and I'm joined now on the line by Peter White, who is the chairman of Relay for Life in Kildare. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. How are you?
I'm great and delighted to have you on with us, Peter. 10 years in the making, and you're still going. Tell us more.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that it's undergone 10 years. I think over the 10 years, our teams are remarkable people, but they've actually contributed over 600,000 to the Irish Cancer Society in those 10 years. So, they're just brilliant people. The teams are fabulous. But, we're looking so forward to the 10th and the 11th of June this year to celebrate the 10th anniversary. The Curragh race course have been extremely good to us. They've given us everything we've asked for, and they've given us the full run of the entire race course. They've been fabulous. So we're getting help from every corner in Kildare. It's absolutely magnificent.
And only rightly so, because I think there isn't a corner of Kildare probably that hasn't been affected by cancer. We know most families probably know someone within their community, if not in their own family, that have been affected. For those that don't know about Relay for Life, or maybe have never attended, what's it like, Peter?
Well, I tell you, it's a gathering. We do a 24-hour walk. Everyone thinks the relay is a run. It's actually a walk. It's a walk around 3,000, 4,000 candle bags that we lay out on the tarmac in front of the race course. And all the teams and their families and their friends come up and walk around the relay path. And that goes on for an entire 24 hours. And the reason behind that, Caoimhe, is that cancer doesn't sleep. So all the teams and the team members, they agree that they're not going to sleep for those 24 hours. So in that 24 hours, they are all have their own locations in tents. They sell little bits and pieces to try and make some funding for Irish Cancer Society. They have their fun laps. They have 24-hour entertainment on a stage that's built. We have breakfasts, we have all food arranged, everything that anyone could want. And this year, because it's our 10th anniversary, we're making it a family fun day as well. So there's lots to do for kids. And knowing I have 10 grandkids myself, and I think the biggest thing is trying to get something to entertain with. So they could do an awful lot worse than coming up to relay and enjoy themselves. Basically, There is no cover charge, and everyone is welcome. We're expecting between 7 and 10,000 this year visitors, which is pretty normal with the people from Kildare. So anyone is touched with cancer or anyone in their family, and they just want to do something small, just come to Relay and experience it. It's absolutely fabulous.
You say that 600,000 has been raised over the past 10 years. Obviously, I know it's a free event, but money obviously is generated through donations and the proceeds of everything that happens over there, Peter.
Yeah, this is it. Prior to that, we have 20 teams from all over Kildare, and we meet them on a regular basis, and these people really are enthusiastic. There's no stopping. They're having their coffee mornings, they're having their fundraisers, they're having their cake sales, they're doing sponsored walks, they're climbing mountains. It's unbelievable what these people are doing. So nearly all the funding has been generated prior to the relay.
Okay.
It's just for something for them to do during the 24 hours and to entertain the people and maybe have some sales as well.
Okay, and I suppose at the heart of it all is just an opportunity to celebrate cancer survivors and remember those who you've maybe lost over their battles through the years.
Well, both of those things are celebrated and really, really well. Lisa is taking care of our survivors, and she is a survivor herself. We have, I would say, possibly 140 survivors coming this year, which is magnificent to see. And the Candle of Hope ceremony celebrates all those people that have passed and the people that are surviving at the moment. And it's the highlight of the 24 hours. It happens on the Saturday evening around dusk, and those 4,000 candle bags will be lit with candles, and there's special messages, personal messages written on the candle bags of people that have passed or people that are fighting cancer, and it's very emotional. I think, you know, there's nobody would leave us without a tear in their eye and without really feeling happy that they've done something for someone that has passed with cancer.
Absolutely. 10th and 11th of June. What time on the 10th would it get going at, Peter?
We kick off at 1 o'clock on the 10th on a Saturday, and we finish at 1 o'clock on the 11th on Sunday, and that is to give the teams a chance to set up their stalls for the 24 hours and to get everything in place. So it's a 24 hour, but 1 o'clock on Saturday it will start.
Okay. If anyone wants to get involved or maybe help out, can they just go onto the website? Is there a website for Relay for Life?
Yes, it's Kildare Relay for Life website, and it's possibly the easiest way to make contact with us. On that, you get all the information, you get all the videos, you get all the contact numbers, and you will also see what the teams are doing. And even as we speak, Quiva, there's teams, you know, in the next week or two will be fundraising, and that will be on our Facebook as well. So it will be in your locality. Look it up on Facebook and support them, because you really have to be impressed with what these people do.
Absolutely. Peter White, Chairman for Relay for Life. Of course, if you want to get involved with Relay for Life, as Peter said there, the best way you can do it is to just go on their website or, of course, onto the Facebook page, and you'll find out all the information about different things happening. But it is the 10th and 11th of June this year, kicking off with at 1 p.m. and then, of course, the main thing, the Candle of Hope ceremony. So thanks very much to Peter. Now, moving on to, more charity, but this one does not come as a surprise, because I think most people in Ireland will know that we are a very giving nation, and 9 out of 10 Irish adults donated to a charity last year. That's according to the charity's regulator. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Helen Martin. She's CEO of the charity's regulator. Good afternoon, Helen.
Good afternoon.
Helen, I mean, it's a great news story, and like I said in the intro there, not a surprise.
No, not a surprise. I mean, we've seen it for years now that when it comes to donating to charitable causes, you know, the Irish really do get involved. And what we've seen in this particular survey is, even though things like the financial contributions, the money has fallen slightly in terms of the number of people who are donating using money, that people are, for example, finding other ways to donate through the donation of goods.
Mm. Can you explain to us what the charity's regulator does at a basic level?
So we regulate charities in the sense that we ensure that they comply with charity law, but we also register organisations in Ireland that are charities. So we have, there's a charity test, so it's not a case that everybody who wants to call themselves a charity will necessarily be registered as a charity. There is a test and it's quite rigorous, so there is a registration process. But if you meet the criteria, you're then required to be registered. So again, it's not optional either for charities.
Okay, very good. I suppose then, like in some countries, I know that charities maybe are not as needed as much. The argument can be made sometimes that if there was enough government funding, that charities would cease to exist. What would you say to that?
I think ultimately, you know, charities step into to gaps that are there and they fill a need. And charities will be around for as long as people continue to do that and are willing to volunteer and give up their time. You know, in Ireland at the moment, we have, you know, over 76,000 charity trustees. So they're the people who are volunteering to actually sit on the boards of charities. But we also have multiples of that in terms of volunteers all around Ireland, hundreds of thousands of people who volunteer weekly and daily, you know, in charities around Ireland. So I think that, that need will always be there. And certainly, I think when people see how vulnerable people in society are assisted by charities or how, you know, particular causes are progressed by charities, that they want to support them and get involved.
Absolutely. And like we said, 9 out of 10 or 89% of adults donated to charity last year. And the nature of those has changed, maybe possibly because of the cost of living and that kind of thing. In terms of then donations, are we in terms of other things than money? How are we in that?
Well, what we've seen actually is that there's, while donations in money of money have fallen by around 15%, we've seen an increase of 14% in terms of people who are donating goods. So again, it comes back to that point about people maybe perhaps finding that they don't have as much money and therefore wanting to donate in other ways. So charity shops are also encountering situations where they have more customers. So that's absolutely fantastic for those charities that are dependent or, you know, on their charity shops to get income for the causes that they work in. Conscious, of course, that not all charities raise funds by having a charity shop. So, you know, the donation of goods is particularly important for some charities, but for other charities, there's still that challenge there of needing to get funds in. But what we did see is that there was an increase for those who were continuing to donate money. There was an increase in the amount that they were donating. So, you know, it had gone up to €169 per annum in terms of the most recent survey. So I think that's promising for charities, but there's still a challenge there for them.
Absolutely. I suppose just different things, you know, events. Some charities do events and others have shops. It just depends, I suppose, on the charity. In terms of the types of charities that were most donated to, what was that like?
Yeah, this was pretty similar to when we did the survey back in 2020. So the top charities or types of charities that people were donating to were either health related, those operating the homeless or refuge area, or local community organisations. Then with children and youth services and animal rescue then following kind of fourth and fifth position there. And so that was pretty similar to what we saw before. So there's very strong support for those particular types of charities. And I think that's understandable given the kind of things that, you know, that we've seen, particularly the crisis around homelessness, but also even in terms of our reactions, you know, during COVID and also in terms of the Ukraine war.
Okay. Are people confident in the charities in Ireland and are they happy to donate and, you know, that they feel that they're being run efficiently?
Well, we saw that levels of trust and confidence had fallen in this most recent charity, but that's actually similar to the trend that we've seen in other jurisdictions such as Scotland and England and Wales. What I thought was really interesting about this survey, certainly from the charities regulator's perspective, was that our message around ensuring that you're informed as a donor, you know, find out as much as you can as a charity, seemed to be getting through. So in 2020, 65% of adults surveyed said that, you know, trust and confidence, the level of trust and confidence that they had in a charity impacted on their donation decision. Whereas it was up to 80% this time round. So 80% of adults were saying, no, that's a really important factor for us, the level of trust and confidence that we have in a charity. And interestingly, 9 out of 10 adults said that the way in which that could be achieved in terms of them having greater trust and confidence was having greater transparency on the part of charities. So knowing how their donation was used and seeing evidence of what had been achieved by the charity with that donation. So, you know, charities do publish a certain amount of information. There's a register of charities. It's available on the Charities Regulator's website, charitiesregulator.ie. And on that, if you're a member of the public, you can just go on there and you can check to see if any organisation that you're interested in donation to is in fact a registered charity. So there's a list of all registered charities. And there's also other information there. So you can look and see, for example, how many volunteers a charity has, and you know, or do they employ staff, things like their income, their expenditure. So there is a level of information there that perhaps the public isn't aware of. And we'd like to see more information, and we're looking for some legislative amendments to provide even greater transparency for the public around that. But I think you know, the information is there, but there's also, again, it's a challenge for charities to get out there and actually distinguish themselves by providing greater accountability and you know, publishing their own detailed accounts and letting people out there know, well, you know, this is what we did with your donations in, you know, the last 6 months, the last year, and really getting out there and telling their story. But I think what's promising about this, as I said, this survey, is that the public is demanding to see that now, and that they're making it clear that in order for them to donate, that this information has to be very visible to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, like you said, the word transparency there, you of course are the charity regulator. In terms of what people or charities can pay, you know, management or CEOs, is there a cap on that, Helen? Because I know we've heard over the last few years, not going to name anything, but there has been, you know, talk within the media of different charities paying X amount. And, you know, you can hear multiples of figures and you kind of think, you know, is that suitable for a charity, for someone in that charity to be paid that amount of money? What is the stance on that, or is there a regulation on it?
There's no threshold in relation to what charities can pay staff. There is a requirement that the staff has to be necessary, and the, you know, what they're paid has to be reasonable. And this goes to the whole area of a charity being set up to provide public benefit, so it must benefit the public. So to the extent there's any private benefit, that means, you know, paying salaries and things like that, and they have to be reasonable and necessary, you know, for what that charity is trying to achieve. The one thing that I would say is certainly people's perception that there are high administration costs and, you know, high salaries are being paid definitely came through in this survey. But what I would say to people is, again, inform yourself about the particular charity, because, you know, charities, there's huge diversity, you know, in Ireland of what constitutes a charity. You know, you've got universities or charities, you've got schools, you've got very small local tiny towns groups, for example, they're charities. So there's a huge difference and a huge diversity in between, you know, between different types of charities. So, you know, what might be reasonable in one case may not be reasonable in another. So it really is something that has to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. Having said that, though, again, it comes back to that transparency and accountability. And I think that's where, you know, charities that are making this information publicly available will be able to, you know, distinguish themselves from others who perhaps aren't. You know, when it comes to, you know, what a charity is spending on its administration, and in general terms on salaries, because I do appreciate there is, you know, there are certain, you know, data protection considerations in certain cases that would apply. But, you know, in general terms, it should be possible to see what charities are spending. And some of that information is, as I said, available already on the Register of Charities. So charities are already providing a certain level of transparency around that. But it really is a case of people informing themselves and seeing, you know, how transparent a charity is being in relation to all of these things.
So it's not a requirement, say, for a charity to list what their CEO is being paid, Helen?
Not at the moment. Okay. Not at the moment. But charities do provide information around salaries, you know, how much they're spending on salaries overall and things like that in relation to the annual report that they submit to the Charities Regulator each year. And that information is available on our website.
Okay. Helen Martin, CEO of the Charities Regulator. Thanks very much, Helen, for your time. With that news there, that 9 out of 10 Irish adults donated to charity last year, and 80% say having trust and confidence in a charity is key before deciding to donate. Thanks, Helen. Now we're going over to Liverpool because Glenn Campbell, a Eurovision super fan from Newbridge, is standing by to tell us all things about Eurovision this year. Good afternoon, Glenn.
Hi, how are you from Liverpool?
Glenn, what's it like over there?
It is. Well, we're only after arriving maybe about 3 or 4 hours ago, and the place is just starting to buzz. There's a great buzz in the air, I must say.
You didn't have to go too far this year, thank God, anyway.
No, 35 minutes in the air.
I'm sure you'd go to the back of beyond anyway, Glenn, because as we know, you're always over there. Tell us about Wild Youth and what do you think their chances are, I suppose, Glenn?
Look, I think they're very unfortunate that they're in the semi-final that they are actually in. It's a very, very tricky... I'm actually sitting around the table with a Finnish guy, a UK lady, a guy from Northern Ireland and myself, and we're just chatting about it. They're just unfortunate that they're in the semi-final tonight that they're in, because there's a lot of hard contenders tonight, you know. But look, this is Eurovision. Anything can happen. But one thing I will say, since we got here, there is a good vibe on the ground here about the Irish song.
Mm. Okay, well, that's good. We know the acts representing in tonight's semi-final: Norway, Malta, Serbia, Latvia, Portugal, Croatia, Switzerland, Israel, Moldova, Azerbaijan, the Czech Republic, Netherlands, Finland, and then Sweden. Of course, Sweden tipped to win it, Glenn. What's the feeling over there?
Well, the feeling there is she is quite popular, but as well as that, there's a lot of talk of it's more Finland, really, that they're talking about more so than Loreen from Sweden, but she is up there. Like, she's either going to take the crown or she's going to come second or third. One, two or three. It seems to be just like a three horse race, really, for the grand final.
And have you heard Finland's song? What do you think their chances are? They're tipped to win it, are they?
It's like Netta from 2018. It's just bonkers. That's what Eurovision is all about. It's just utterly bonkers, but it's, You wouldn't get it. Yeah, exactly. My friend is here. But you wouldn't get it anywhere else other than Eurovision. It's just pure bonkers, and it's a fan favorite.
Okay, 15 are going to play tonight, and then there's going to be 10 going through. So it is quite competitive there. I suppose last year I was disappointed because I really liked Brooke Scullion. I really thought she had a chance. I thought she was such a Eurovision, you know, hopeful. She was so young. She had all the bop about her, and she didn't get through. You know, so I have to say, like, you know, my hopes are kind of, you know, not that great, to be honest.
Well, look, Brooke was robbed last year. Now, everyone said that after the semi-finals that it was we're actually starting a campaign to try and to get her to do it again. But Wild Youth, like, it's you know, as I said, the semi-final is very difficult. This semi-final, I mean, you do have really good songs in it. And it seems to be respectfully, it's a middle-of-the-road song. But look, anything could happen, you know. Something could happen on the night that we didn't see in the rehearsals, and they could just get in by the skin of their teeth.
Okay. So we'll have to wait and see, of course. But I suppose, look, we'll have you on again. Please God, we'll be able to have you on again if they do get through. And fingers crossed here, we'll have to pray that they do. Anyone that's kind of standing out for you other than the obvious?
Well, actually, the French, my personal favourite, actually, just sitting around the table before you guys called out to me, the French song is really... is really my favourite personally, but she's the dark horse, you know, that's one to be watching out for.
Okay.
But they automatically qualify for the final, so they're there. But I think it's a song to watch out for. If anyone's a betting person, I'd put a fiver on France.
Okay, and are they newcomer, or have they, you know, been in before?
No, she's well established. She's a Canadian French Canadian singer. They wanted her to do it the last couple of years, but she just couldn't. But this is the time, and the song was right for her. And I thought the interview, the song was right for her, and she said, "Okay, let's do it." But she's actually totally a dark horse. I'd be putting a fiver on it if anyone was putting any money on any song.
Okay, well, there you go, Kildare people, get out there and put your money on France. Have you been talking to any of the lads from Wild Youth? I know you're only there a few hours, but have you seen anyone?
I haven't, to be fair, but like, look, I've been on. I was on the flight over, and the drummer's mum was there, and some of the singer's sister. You know, the whole family. They were at the top of the plane, and we were just saying hello and stuff. They were buzzing with excitement. I suppose you would be, I suppose, if your sons was representing their country. You know, but there's a great buzz in the atmosphere here, though, in general for Ireland.
Absolutely. Well, listen, well, have a great time. I know you will anyway, Glenn, because you're a man to follow the fun fair anyway. and best of luck to you. We hope you enjoy your night over there. Thanks very much for coming on. I suppose we'll take the song We Are One from Wild Youth, and you can let me know what you think. 0833 97 97 97. Are we going to win it? Who knows?
We take our first breath, then we exhale. back up again. We take a look around. Every wall. We keep on fighting.